Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. One of our finest political and social commentators is Glenn Ford. This installment features him. He's an activist, and he's editor of the very good online magazine, Black Agenda Report. I discovered his written and spoken commentaries maybe 3 years ago, and I'm impressed. Check him out yourself at www.blackagendareport.com. He's black. His commentaries are on issues of concern to the black community and are addressed especially to thoughtful members of the black community. Well, guess what? I'm a late middle-aged white guy, and I find 95% of everything he says intelligent, very relevant to my own life, and very true to my own experiences. As John Donne said in his sonnet, "Send not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee." Or to be less highfalutin, remember the old ad campaign? You don't have to be Jewish to love Levy's rye bread. That's how I feel about Glenn Ford and about BlackAgendaReport.com in general. Ford's has been one of the most eloquent voices warning us not to trust office holders of either major party, and especially Obama, who has done nothing for the black community. Or for 99% of the white community, I may point out. Ford also argues that the corporate-controlled media are mainly a propaganda fog machine serving entrenched power at the expense of the citizens. I've got no argument there either. On our sampling today, he'll address each theme in turn. First, the politicians. Here's a 14-minute talk he gave in October 2010 in West Haven, Connecticut. It's titled, "We Have Learned Who Is Real and Who Is Frontin'."
In the last 3 years or so, we've also had an opportunity to discover who was really serious about working profound changes in American society and who was not serious. This recent period has been, I think, a kind of a test of people's politics and of their character. To use some very unscientific language, we have learned who is for real and who is frontin', who is the serious left and who is the phony left, the people who aren't really about seeking social transformation, but rather are constantly looking for ways not to fight. I think all of you know who those people are in your immediate vicinities. I maintain that one important reason for the near total collapse of the left in 2000 and 2008 was because significant portions of what claimed to be progressive and anti-war really wanted only to declare victory over Bush and then fold up their tents. And not only did they not want to confront Obama, they wanted to make sure that nobody else did either. They became his left flank, and we are still having to wrestle with them. Despite all the nonsense that's going on among people who call themselves progressives and leftists, we are still among the more serious folks in American politics. What passes for politics in the corporate media is very much like TV wrestling, only it's not as much fun. As a kid, I liked TV wrestling. I was drawn into television wrestling by the late, great Bobo Brazil. He was the biggest black wrestler of his time, and he was extremely good-looking. He had this great smile. And the whole idea, when I was a kid, the whole idea of him losing hurt me to my heart. And even though I knew that TV wrestling was phony, that didn't matter to me, because he was Bobo Brazil. His real name was Houston Harris, and he really was from Little Rock, Arkansas, but that didn't matter to me either, and it still doesn't matter. I also like the tag team matches because tag teams are twice as phony and therefore twice as funny. They are hilariously phony. Today's two-party politics reminds me of nothing so much as tag team wrestling on the television. Here's how it goes. The entire show is owned by one company. All the wrestlers work for the same company. The only real competition is about which wrestlers are going to be assigned to win their matches and who will be assigned to lose. Now, a wrestler like Bobo Brazil, who can engage the crowd and make them suspend their disbelief and imagine that the game is real, he is good for business, and therefore he's going to be allowed to win, because that is good for the company. The company always wins, because the company owns not just the wrestlers, they own the whole game and the television rights to it. At this juncture in history, Wall Street owns the whole major political party game. In fact, with Obama's election, Wall Street owns more of the Democrats than the Republicans because they paid more for them. The campaign contributions tell the tale. The ownership of the parties is an open and obvious fact, as open and obvious as the proprietorship of TV wrestling. And the phoniness of the game should be as obvious to everyone as is TV wrestling. Yet Americans pretend not to know that the political party players are owned by the same company. Much of the public eagerly buy into the fiction that real power is at stake in the major party political games. In 2008, however, the owners of the game, and I mean Wall Street, experienced a deep crisis that forced them to reveal that the two parties were not really antagonists at all, that they weren't actually on the opposite teams. Bush and Obama, or if you will, McCain and Obama, were on the same side. They were part of the same Wall Street finance capitalist tag team. Never has it been more clear that the same people ran both political parties, more clear than it was in October of 2008. It was clearer, in fact, than when Republican Rutherford B. Hayes and Democratic Senator Tilden made their famous compromise in 1877 and agreed that it was best that Reconstruction in the South come to an end for the good of the country. The agreement between Bush and candidate Barack Obama was even more stark than the Hayes-Tilden compromise. The bailout of the banks was a team effort. Bush, McCain, Obama, with all the characteristics of wrestling tag team. You'll remember that George Bush's first attempt to bail out the banks was on a Monday. He failed. He lost the greater part of his own party and a whole bunch of Democrats, especially the more liberal Democrats. The Republican administration was pinned to the mat. They had threatened that failure to pass the bailout would lead to an unleashing of martial law and the end of capitalism as we know it. But the anti-bailout forces on Capitol Hill still wrestled them down. They put them in a double headlock and had Bush beat on that Monday. So what does Bush do? He starts waving his hands in the air and calling for his tag team partner to save him. And candidate Barack Obama jumps in and he tags Bush's hand and starts wrestling against his fellow Democrats. It was reminiscent of the great tag team match of 1994, I believe it was, when Bill Clinton tagged the Republicans to beat a majority of his fellow Democrats to pass the NAFTA Free Trade Act and to please the Uber bosses on Wall Street. How many tens of millions of jobs ago was that? In October of 2008, before even becoming president, Barack Obama intervened to sway the Democrats to pass the bailout on the Friday of the week that it had initially been defeated. A solid majority of the Congressional Black Caucus had been against the bailout on Monday, but by Friday, only 8 Black Caucus members were opposed. That was because of Barack Obama. He carried the day for his tag teammate, George Bush. Now that is great tag team work. And the process was begun that has led to the greatest transfer of wealth in the history of mankind to the finance capitalists, the guys that own both teams and own the game of major party politics in the United States. Barack Obama then proceeded to put together a government that would continue in the tag team mode of operations in the economic and the war-making arenas. All of his most important guys were Wall Street and the Pentagon. This was not a transition of the outs to the ins. It was a continuity under the same management, Wall Street and its military enforcers. And it's not that we have any real choice. The world can either bring down the imperial monster or be destroyed by it. Humanity and imperialism cannot coexist. The imperialists don't have any choice in the matter either. This is not your grandfather's kind of imperialism. This is rule of finance capital. These are the people who create nothing and can only survive by rigging and manipulating markets and rigging the terms and even the scope of other people's production. And they do that at the point of a gun. And they do it by eliminating America's workers from their jobs in a relentless race to the bottom. Some liberals maintain that the people who rule in the United States are making a big mistake by spending so much money on weapons of war. More money, in fact, than the rest of the world combined. But I say that they are not making a mistake. The United States is ruled by finance capital. They are the creators of nothing, the coercers of everything, the masters of rigging markets. For that, they need every bullet that they can get their hands on, and they still cannot defeat the tide of human resistance to their rule. They can't subdue one of the poorest, least developed countries on the face of the earth, Afghanistan. They can't subdue a nation that hasn't even had a government since the early 90s, Somalia. The United States has succeeded only in inflaming the whole of the Horn of Africa in an attempt to snuff out probably about 20,000 Islamic Somali nationalists, the Shabab. They need every bullet, and they still will not be saved by their weapons. But millions will die in the process of imperialism's inevitable demise. 5 to 6 million have already died in the Eastern Congo alone. 5 to 6 million. That is approximately equal to the death toll of European Jewry under the Nazis. And that's just in one African country over the past 16 years. The bulk of those deaths are the result of military actions and invasions by two U.S. proxies of the region, Rwanda and Uganda. The militaries of those two countries now control the flow of precious minerals to multinational corporations, who, of course, benefit from that. Those 5 or 6 million people are just a part of the price that imperialism extracts from humanity, but no amount of blood will save imperialism either. As an economic system, U.S.-based finance capital is already in the crypt. It's just refusing to die. The proof is in the very existence of at least $600 trillion in derivatives, that is, phony money, worldwide. The gross planetary product, that means the sum total real value of all the goods and services produced by all the people of the world every year, is only between $50 and $70 trillion, depending upon who's doing the counting. The financial capitalist derivatives, with a notional value 10 times the real value of what real people make on this real planet, those two numbers are totally disconnected, and they disconnect finance capital from the actual workings of the planet. It shows them to be a scabrous extrusion of a parasitical class that we must disarm so that humanity can live. And that is why we're going to Washington. Not because we're angry, but because we have no choice. We fight them because they have no choice but to be the monsters that they are. I know it sounds like fate and religion, but it's quite human. These are human contradictions, and we must respond. That's why we're going to Washington. We're going to D.C. to speak truth to power.
Glenn Ford on Politics, American Style. In addition to other merits, this talk holds some nostalgia for me. I remember Bobo Brazil, at least the name, from my childhood. The favorite wrestler in the Philadelphia area in the 1960s was Bruno Sammartino, supposedly a local guy. Bobo Brazil was a frequent opponent of Bruno's. I have no idea of Bruno Sammartino's real name and hometown. Possibly Chauncey Farnsworth from Cedar Rapids, Ohio. Whatever. As I put this show together, Muammar Gaddafi is still alive, the U.S.-sponsored Libyan rebels are making no progress, and NATO is bombing the hell out of civilians. Here are two recent commentaries from Black Agenda Report, Black Agenda Radio. Here Glenn Ford denounces the U.S.'s bloody wars of conquest, specifically in Libya. But his principal focus is on the lies spun by the corporate-controlled media that aid and abet the U.S.'s war crimes.
Every day in Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, Congo, and now Libya, the U.S. corporate media commit crimes against humanity that are equal to the crimes perpetrated by the United States government. As facilitators of those crimes through ceaseless propaganda, lies, and demonization of those targeted by the United States, the corporate media are just as guilty of the grossest human rights violations as the government they serve. The New York Times and the rest of the howling corporate propagandists that call themselves journalists behave no differently than the German newspaper publisher Julius Streicher, who was hanged for his media crimes against humanity in October 1946. Streicher paid with his life for having used his newspaper, Der Stürmer, to demonize Jews and thus, in the words of the death sentence against him, infected the German mind with the virus of anti-Semitism and incited the German people to active persecution of Jews. Streicher was not a member of the German military, and he did not take part in the Holocaust. But the judgment of Nuremberg was that his brand of journalism was a crime against humanity and warranted his execution. If the verdict was appropriate for the Nazi journalist Streicher in 1946, it should certainly apply to those in the corporate media today who infect the American mind with murderous emotions and feed the public lies that seek to transform aggressive war into a humanitarian rescue mission and mock the victims of NATO's savage bombing of the Libyan capital, Tripoli. John Burns of the New York Times is a celebrity media criminal.
in addition to demonizing Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi in precisely the same way that he and his colleagues portrayed Iraq's Saddam Hussein, and that a previous generation of journalistic degenerates depicted Fidel Castro. Byrne's current mission is to deny that hundreds of NATO bombing sorties against Tripoli have killed Libyan civilians. His constant dismissal of Libyan casualties is vulgar and racist in the extreme, and has the effect of inviting more NATO bombing and more civilian killings. If anybody calling themselves a journalist had been running around London at the time of the 1940 Nazi Blitz, claiming that British civilian bombing casualties were negligible or minimal, they would have been arrested and probably hanged. Byrne's colleagues among the lying pack of corporate media criminals camped out in Tripoli hotels create the propaganda that causes death to rain down on the city's citizens. But according to Byrne's June 7 story, Western reporters keep NATO informed when they leave their hotels so that they will not be caught up in the bombing. Once the imperialist press is safely back at the hotel, the killing can begin again. Byrne's colleagues in rebel-held regions of Libya spend most of their time glorifying an opposition that is riddled with exactly the kind of Islamic jihadis that these same reporters demonize as deserving of death in Afghanistan and Iraq. U.S. corporate media understand full well that the power to demonize is a weapon of war, and they point that weapon in whatever direction their government wishes. In the final reckoning, they are as guilty as the government they serve. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford.
Cities are full of criminals. All of them are black. They'll shoot you for your shoes or to get a little crack. But the police are protecting us, locking up these thugs, making us all safer by being tough on drugs. There was a truck bomb in Baghdad, blew up the UN. These fanatics do not have a care for innocent women and men. They don't like civilization, it's just destruction that they crave. There is no rhyme or reason for the way that they behave. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on the evening news. There's a war on in Colombia, and it's all about cocaine. The FARC is running drugs from Mexico to Maine. It's an ugly situation, but soon it will be whipped. We just need to send along more helicopter gunships. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on evening news. There was a bomber in Jerusalem, blew himself up on a bus. He was a funny-looking Muslim, not like one of us. He didn't like the Jews, and he says that God is great. I don't know what his problem is, he's just so full of hate. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on evening news. Are plotting to blow up Washington, D.C. Cause they don't like freedom and democracy. They're fans of the Dark Ages. They are all around. They're marching from the desert sand and coming to your town. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on evening news. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on evening news.
As you could hear, I couldn't resist slipping in a little David Rovix. I don't know if that calls for an apology, so what the heck. Here's one more essay by Glenn Ford. One of the sleaziest tricks in war propaganda is to have the press falsely report that enemy forces are mass raping innocent women. During World War II, the Allied press solemnly reported that the invading German army was raping Belgian nuns. In the NATO-sponsored destruction of Yugoslavia, the press dutifully reported that the Bosnian Serbs had set up rape camps in Bosnia or Kosovo or wherever. Now it's indignantly reporting that For reasons unknown, Gaddafi has ordered his soldiers to mass rape Libyan women. In a modern twist, he's said to be supplying the rapists with Viagra. It's all lies, of course. Here's Glenn Ford.
The slander campaign against Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi has reached way beyond the realm of the ridiculous and can only be described as obscene. We are now supposed to believe that Colonel Gaddafi himself ordered his soldiers to rape hundreds of women. There is not one bit of hard evidence that such mass rapes have occurred, but that does not seem to matter to the corporate media that are bent on glorifying the Benghazi-based rebels and demonizing Gaddafi and his soldiers. Amnesty International, an organization that is decidedly hostile to Gaddafi's government, admits that it cannot find evidence of mass rapes by the Libyan armed forces. And the man in charge of the United Nations human rights investigation in Libya told journalists that mass hysteria was behind the rape charge. Nevertheless, the Western media repeat the baseless allegations ad nauseam, like young boys telling dirty stories. The International Criminal Court, which specializes in prosecuting Africans who get on the wrong side of the United States, speaks vaguely of being in possession of evidence, but it turns out that the allegations come from one Libyan woman who claims that she sent out inquiries about sexual assaults to 70,000 women and that 60,000 of them responded and 259 reported they had been abused. But when investigators asked this solitary source to show them the questionnaires, as investigative reporter Russ Baker tells us, she could not produce the evidence. And it is a mystery how she could have mailed out and gotten back tens of thousands of questionnaires when Libya's postal system had been shut down by the war. This war was launched on the basis of an imaginary massacre of Libyan civilians by Gaddafi's forces, which of course never happened, and is now fueled by a campaign of demonization and a depraved indifference to the truth. Certainly, since 2001, the world has been subjected to a massive U.S. psychological assault, a vast disinformation operation in which the corporate media act as megaphones for government liars. The invasion of Iraq was launched by lies about weapons of mass destruction. When the lies fell apart, American politicians justified the war by saying it was worth it to get rid of the monster, Saddam Hussein. Saddam was so thoroughly demonized that any amount of maiming and death would be acceptable to erase him from the scene. If Saddam Hussein was the devil himself, then there could be no limits on military efforts to eliminate him. Now, the same kind of dehumanizing psychological offensive is directed at Muammar Gaddafi, who is depicted in comic book style as a puppet master of mass rape, so that whatever death and destruction is rained down on Libya by NATO, it will have been worth it. This is a profoundly dangerous way for a superpower to behave. It fills the population with a bloodlust that cannot be easily controlled. The U.S. government, with plenty of help from the media, is telling Americans that those who oppose U.S. policies in the world are savages. That's what the white settlers said about the Indians, and we know how that ended. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford.
Thus ends our appreciation of Glenn Ford. There are other good commentators at Forbes magazine, too. Check them out at www.blackagendareport.com. It's free, by the way. So is our own site, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. where you'll find descriptions, plus a large archive of past installments and other goodies. It'll get to my non-carborundum, and please tune in again next week. Ciao.